The title of today's shiur is When Secular Law Says No, Halakhic Obligations, When Mila, Shechita, and Abortion Are Illegal. See, with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, one of the questions that has come up is what should a Jew do in a state where abortion may be illegal but halakhically permitted or maybe even obligated? For example, the Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg rules that abortion can be permitted under some circumstances during the second trimester, as he ruled in a case of a baby who, if he would come to term, would be a Tay-Sachs baby, causing major suffering to the mother. What if someone lived in a state where abortion would be illegal? What should she do? What is she halakhically required or allowed to do? And what about bris milah and shechita? 11 years ago, there were efforts to criminalize bris milah in San Francisco. In 2018, Iceland proposed a ban on bris milah. When it comes to Shechita, the Nazis banned Shechita in Germany once Hitler became Chancellor of Germany. Currently, Switzerland does not allow beef Shechita without prior stunning. Similar bans are in place in Sweden, Norway, Iceland, Lithuania, and New Zealand. This past Tuesday, Rabbi Mervis used a speech. Rabbi Mervis is the chief rabbi of the UK. He used a speech at a major conference on religious freedom called the International Ministerial Conference on Freedom of Religion or Belief, to warn of the threat of both circumcision and kosher meat slaughter in a number of countries in Europe today. So first I'm going to discuss the general parameters of the obligation of observing the law of the land, and then analyze how this requirement would relate to a law forbidding bris milah, shechita, and then abortion. And then I'm going to discuss one more factor to consider and how this may apply to these situations as well. The Gemara in a number of places, one place is Gittin Daf Yud Amud Beis, cites the view of Shmuel that Dina de Machusa Dina, the law of the land is binding. And there are at least three theories as to why that is true. The Rashbam in Baba Basra Daf Nun Dal Amud Beis states that the rationale for Dina de Machusa Dina is Shekol B'nei HaMalchus Mekablim Aleihem Meretzonam Chukei HaMelch U'Mishpatav, that all citizens of the land are considered to have voluntarily accepted the king's statutes and laws as the condition of living in the land. This is what's known as the social contract. Rashi in Gittin, Daf, Testament Beis, when explaining why documents that were drawn up in non-Jewish courts, whose signatures are from non-Jews, why are they valid in, if they're financial documents? Rashi says that al hadinim nitztavu b'nei Noach, because non-Jews are commanded to adhere to civil laws. It's one of the Shev Mitzvot b'nei Noach, which is called dinim, and based on that, they have to have lawful societies, and we're required to follow the laws that the non-Jews impose or issue in whatever country we find ourselves. And the Shita Mekubetzes in Baba Basra Daf Nun Daf Amud Beis explains that the our requirement, or the, let's put it this way, the secular government's ability to expropriate property is similar to the laws of the king, and like the principle of Hefker based in Hefker, that a Jewish court can expropriate property, which is called Hefker based in Hefker. So these are three different theories regarding the obligation to be a good citizen, the rights, the obligation based on social contract, based on dinim, the Shem and Sperei Noach, one of the laws, and based on, similar to the concept of Hefker based in Hefker. Now, not all laws are required. As Jews, we're not necessarily required to follow all laws of the land. And there are different opinions about the limitations on this obligation of Dina de Mechusa Dina. Some Rishonim say it only applies to laws that benefit the king, and some say it only applies to laws related directly to real estate. Some say it applies to all financial matters. The Rama in Hilchos Gezela, Simon Shin Samach Tes, Sif Yud Aleph, explains that Dina de Mechusa Dina applies when it comes to taxes. And also, they included in most Rishonim hold that it applies to taxes. And it also applies, Bidavar Sheshba Hana Lemelech Oshu Latakanos Beyamdina. So, what laws that benefit the king or society. obviously taxes, paying your taxes could either benefit the king or society. But that's the how the Rama understands when we're required to observe the laws of the land, if it benefits the king or benefits society. The Tashbetz in Chelek Aleph Simon Kuf Nun Ches explains Shebechol Davar Sheish Bo Iser Ef Shalomar Dina Chusadina, that if the law tells you to violate a prohibition, you're not required to follow this law based on Dina the Machusa Dina. And the Rambam in Hilchos Gedeva, Perek Hey Halacha Yadalit, explains that if the secular court of the king applies a discriminatory rule, like a discriminatory tax, then you don't have to pay the tax. Or in Hilchos Gneiva, Perek Halacha Yud Ches states that it only applies to an authority that's been established. But if he's not established as the king, then, and he makes rules, but he's not been accepted as the ruler, then you don't have to follow the law. So with these parameters in mind, let's go through the different cases. So let's say the secular law says that it's forbidden to have a bris milah. So here you would have dina de mechusa dina conflicting with a chiyuv, an obligation. So based on the Tashbetz and others, dina de mechusa dina would not apply, and therefore you would be obligated to do bris milah. You would not have to follow the law of the land. You're obligated to do the bris milah. Now, would you have to go to jail rather than do, let's say the law says that you have to, if you do bris milah, you go to jail? Well, the Shulchan Aruch in Or Chaim Hilchos Lulav Simon Tofresh Nunvav Seif Aleph discusses what happens if you don't have an esrog or some other mitzvah, passing mitzvah. If you don't perform it now, you're going to miss it. So the Rama writes, you don't have to spend a lot of money, or most of your money. It says, you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your earnings. So it could be, if you're going to face a prison term, if you perform a mitzvah saseh, then you don't have to perform the mitzvah saseh. So maybe you would argue that you don't have to do bris milah if it would cost you too much to do so, if the penalty would be too great. However, there's another halacha. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeh Hilchos Avodas Chochavim Siman Kuf Nun Zayit Seif Aleph writes that Ve'im Hu Shas HaGzeira Yisrael Levadam, if it's a what's called the Shas HaShmad, if there's religious persecution, then Yeharg Vayava, you're supposed to give up your life rather than violate any prohibition. Now the truth is, the Rama says this only applies to mitzvahs lo taseh. That if in times of religious persecution, even though normally speaking, you're allowed to eat non-kosher food, you don't have to give up your life in order not to eat non-kosher food, but in times of religious persecution, you're supposed to give up your life. But the Rama writes, that if in times of religious persecution they make a rule not to fulfill mitzvahs asay, you don't have to give up your life. So maybe if you would argue that maybe any law where there would be an anti-circumcision law, both when I spoke to Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Weider, both of them suggested, or both of them believed, that these types of laws that are that they tried to pass in certain European countries were against were an attempt at Jewish religious persecution. In which case, you would be obligated to have a bris milah, even if it meant a prison sentence. Of course, you can go to a different country and have the bris milah there. What's interesting is that it would seem from the Rama that you would not have to give up your life in times of religious persecution to fulfill a mitzvah's asay. Only a low tasay you'd have to give up your life. Nevertheless, it seems that Rabbi Weider told me, thinks that we have a history of giving up our lives rather than not fulfill the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So he thought, or really sort of concurred, that these are both cases, this would be a case of religious persecution, and you would be obligated to perform a Bris Milah. So that's how you'd analyze Bris Milah. When it comes to Shechita, so there's no obligation to eat meat, right? In other words, it's not that the law is telling you that you have to violate a prohibition. You are allowed to, according to halacha, you're allowed to shecht an animal. The law says you're not allowed to. The law is not telling you to violate an isser. And it seems that this law was, whether you agree or disagree, this law is made perhaps for animal rights. Again, you can disagree with it. But this law arguably was made for societal reasons. And therefore, you would not be allowed to shecht an animal. You can import. I think most of these countries would say that you can't shecht an animal, but let's say before stunning. So I think in most of these countries where you cannot shecht an animal, you could generally import shechted meat, but you would not be allowed to shecht an animal in these countries because the law of land does not tell you to violate an isser. Therefore, you would not be allowed to slaughter an animal if that was the rule. When it comes to abortion, so it may depend. If it's a pikuach nefesh situation where a woman's life is at stake, so then pikuach nefesh would certainly override din of the mechusadina, and you would be allowed to have, a woman would be allowed to have an abortion in a state where din of the mechusadina, where abortion would be illegal, if it's to protect the mother's life is potentially at stake. It's a case of pikuach nefesh. If it's clearly not a case of pikuach nefesh, let's say it's a very stressful situation. Again, not every situation that's a stressful situation would be a woman would be permitted to have an abortion. But I'm sure we could conceive, if you follow the Tzitz Eliezer, you could conceive of a situation where halacha would allow the woman to have an abortion, but it would not be a case of pikuach nefesh. It would seem that in that case, if the state would say that you're not allowed to have an abortion in that place, it would seem that halachically the woman would not be allowed to have an abortion. She'd have to go to a different state to have the abortion. That being said, Willig pointed out to me that even if on the books the state said that under some circumstance you're not allowed to have an abortion, if it's not enforced, then you might not have to follow the law. Let's say, for example, it says that you're not allowed to go over the speed limit. So if you go five miles over the speed limit, and that's basically never enforced, you don't violate Dina Mechusa Dina. So time will tell. It's not clear yet. But it could be that if on the books the state says, then if the state says that there's some circumstances that a woman cannot have an abortion, but it's never prosecuted, never enforced, so then halakhically you would be allowed, well, would be allowed to get an abortion, even in a non-pikuach nefesh situation. You would not be allowed to use, let's say, an argument and say, well, the secular law says that a woman can't have an abortion, but the Constitution provides that you can have free exercise of religion. So you can have an abortion, even though maybe in a situation where halakhically it's permitted to have an abortion. So then, even if the state says no, then maybe I can say that a woman's allowed to because free exercise of religion. So the answer is that's not a strong argument. The Supreme Court does not allow a man to marry his niece, even though halakhically it's permitted, and therefore Poskim would say a man's not allowed to marry a niece if the second law says you're not allowed to. Let's say someone belongs to the religion of Molech and he believes in child sacrifice. He can't then sacrifice his child and say, well, I'm just free exercise of religion, I'm just exercising my religion. No. So you can't really use the free exercise of religion argument to permit abortion when it's halachically permitted if secular law says that it is illegal. So again, in a state where abortion would be illegal, but halacha would say it's permitted, if it's a case of pikuach nefesh or suffik pikuach nefesh, possible life-threatening situation, then you would not have to halachically follow the law of the land, and the woman could have an abortion. But if it would just be, let's say, mental stress to the extent where a posek would allow halacha an abortion, so that if secular law would say no, then if indeed this was enforced, this law was enforced, then a woman would have to, if she wants to have an abortion, that's halachically permitted, she would have to go to a different state in order to have an abortion. That being said, there is another way to look at, let's say, shechita and abortion. We said that for bris milah, you're obligated to have a bris milah because secular law cannot tell you to violate a nisr. But when it comes to shechita and abortion, there might be another angle to allow it, and that is civil disobedience. There's a story of the Miyaldos HaIvrios, the beginning of Sefer Shmos, the midwives. So they engage in civil disobedience. Paro said to kill the babies who were born, and they didn't. And the Torah says, V'yas lahem batim, that he made for them houses. And there's an interesting debate between Rashi and the Rashbam. Rashi explains that V'yas lahem batim refers to God. That God rewarded the midwives for their civil disobedience by building them batim, houses, dynasties of Kohanim and Levim, because according to Rashi, one of the midwives is Yocheved, and also the other one, which was Miriam, that Hashem built for her a house of Malchus, royalty, because Shevet Yehuda comes from her. Right? She made, so therefore, the Aslan Batim, they were rewarded for their civil disobedience. The Rashbam, though, says, V'yaslan batim, no, it's not referring to God. Paro put them under house arrest. And I think that's a very important way to look at civil disobedience from a halachic standpoint, that you have to be willing to pay the price. But halacha recognizes that sometimes it's valuable to engage in civil disobedience, but again, you have to be willing to pay the price. There's a Talmudic obligation. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Daled Amud Beis, says that anyone who has the ability to protest the behavior of their family members and doesn't is held accountable for their actions. Anyone who has the ability to protest the behavior of the people of his town and does not is held accountable for their sins. And anyone who has the ability to protest the behavior of the entire world and is held accountable for the sins of the whole world. In other words, there's a Talmudic obligation to protest immoral or sinful behavior of the government. And civil disobedience could be a way to do that. Rav Rosenzweig has told me that the requirement of Dina da Mechusa Dina is that you must be a good citizen. And society allows for passive civil disobedience, as long as, again, as you're willing to pay the price, you have to do so publicly. And it's not an act of civil disobedience if you privately do shechita or you privately, when privately has an abortion. Civil disobedience is something that's done publicly in order to hopefully shape public opinion and get the law changed. The key as to whether you can engage in civil disobedience, whether it's a violation of Dina Mechusa Dina, is whether you are defined in society as a criminal as a result of your behavior. Are eminent people respected after they engage in this behavior? In other words, society allows you to violate certain laws and pay the price. Again, whether it's prudent for an Orthodox Jew to engage in civil disobedience for shechita, for abortion, so that's a practical question, a pragmatic question. Some might say we should just keep our heads down and we shouldn't engage in civil disobedience. So that could be a practical question. But again, just to summarize what we said in the shiur, that when it comes to bris milah, you would have to violate dina b'chusa dina, that the law of the land would not apply because it's telling you to violate a prohibition. You would have to perform bris milah. potentially because it's times of religious persecution. And shechita and abortion, if shechita, they would seem that you would not be allowed to engage in shechita, the law says no. Abortion, you would if it's pikuach nefesh, but not if it's not pikuach nefesh. You would be allowed to engage in an abortion if the law is not enforced. And you would be allowed to publicly engage in shechita and abortion if it's a form of civil disobedience.